Yo, this is Michael Franti from Spearhead, and you're listening to non-commercial radio in New York. WBAI is the place to turn to.
Peace. Oh my God. Hear my mother got a sleeping suicide singing. Oh my God. Hear my mother got a sleeping genocide singing. Oh my God. Hear my mother got a sleeping suicide singing. Oh my. My God, oh my God.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York, where the time is 7 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving. Now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse. But if they could, they would. Oh, Billy Bond for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. Bond, Billy Bond!
Very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening. And we have a busy show tonight. All kinds of guests are in the studio. We've got all sorts of things to talk about in the future, things to talk about that happened in the past week. We're joined this week by Jim.
Hello.
And that's Mike over there.
Hi.
And that looks like Redbird over in the corner there.
Good evening.
Walter.
What? I can't hear you.
Wait, I can't hear you either. So I'm speaking to the microphone.
Hello?
Yeah, there you are. Well, you can't hear us because you don't have headphones.
Yeah.
And that is the sound of Bernie S. not being with us right now. But he says that he will be with us in just a little while. He's busy, you see. Too busy to be on the phone. So he hung up, and we'll be calling him later, and hopefully he'll find the time to speak with us. Yes. It's been a busy week, as always. We have all kinds of things underway for the upcoming HOPE conference, including an announcement, an exciting announcement, which I'll be getting to in just a little bit. But first, some news of the week, I suppose. Let's see, where should we start? Mayor Michael Bloomberg said they're a distraction in the classroom. Parents and students say they are a necessary lifeline in case of an emergency. For 20 points, what is it that we are referring to?
I know.
Yes, Mike, go ahead.
Cellular phones.
That's correct. Cellular phones. And Mike wins. You're leading in the first round. Okay. It's about making sure students are able to communicate with their parents over the course of the day. And over the course of the day includes school, according to parent Carmen Colon. The school cell phone ban has become the most heated education issue in years. And on Wednesday, actually last Wednesday, the debate came to the New York City Council, which has introduced legislation that could permit phones in schools but prohibit kids from using them. I don't know exactly how that would work, but yeah, okay. Have a phone, and if you're caught using it, you get in trouble. You know, you get in trouble for so many other things. But it seems to me, like, if you have, like, a Columbine situation, which happens quite a bit, you know, you might need to call somebody and get on CNN.
It's very necessary in today's media-saturated age that you need to appear on television at any moment.
Uh-huh.
If some crisis could erupt, and you might need to appear on television. And the easiest way to do that, unless the kids are all going to start carrying, like, video phones around, is just with a plain old cell phone.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, if you ban cell phones, that also means that you are banning cell phones for the trip into school. And some people have to travel, like, an hour or so to get to school, an hour to get back. So during that whole period of time, they don't have phones. They don't have a way of communicating.
It's kind of silly. I mean, have you heard about this new high-pitched ringtone thing? That was all over the news a couple of days ago. It sort of maybe has something to do with this. Students have started using a ringtone that is so high-pitched that older people are unable to hear it. So,
oh, really?
What surprises me is the fact that the phones are actually able to reproduce a tone this high in frequency, but it's...
Is this like the sound that a TV makes when it's turned on or something?
Yes, it's very high-pitched like that.
I can hear that.
I heard one of them in the subway, actually, as I was leaving the subway once, and it was very high-pitched and obnoxious.
Uh-huh.
So...
Well, you know, there's a lot of younger teachers, too.
Yes, there was a New York Times article which interviewed one of these younger teachers, and the students were shocked.
Unbelievable. So what's the consensus? Should kids have cell phones in school or not? Jim, you have strong opinions on this.
I have opinions on this. I don't know how strong they are. The point is that the cell phone is useful for two things. It's not only a communications device, but it can easily be adapted in many ways to be a cheating device. And to keep the integrity of the classroom, you have to essentially find a way to disable its use as a cheating device. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of difficult, but I presume not impossible.
What if you're taking a test and a teacher...
It's much easier to cheat with a piece of paper.
Well, that's true, too, but not a piece of paper with somebody in another part of the country that can help you fill out that piece of paper, you see.
I hear they outsource this now.
Well, they certainly do, but the teacher can just turn on the cell phone jammer when it gives a test.
Well, the problem is that technically cell phone jammers are illegal in the United States. If they weren't, that would be an excellent solution to this sort of problem.
Moving on, eBay said yesterday that it would add, actually this might have been a week ago yesterday, it was on a Tuesday that they said this though, that's the important thing. They would add a Skype Me button to certain, I swear to God, that's what it's called, the Skype Me button to certain categories of listings, allowing prospective buyers to contact sellers directly through the internet phone service. And of course, for those of you who have been paying attention, eBay has acquired Skype, so they can do things like this. Now, those who push the on-screen button will then be able to contact the seller by voice, they also be able to text chat to them, I suppose, as well, and talk about the item that they're selling. Skype represents a tremendous opportunity for our sellers to connect even more closely with their buyers, according to the president of eBay North America. My question is, do we really want to connect these people any more than they're already connected? I mean, when I go onto eBay, I just want to buy the damn thing. I don't want to enter a relationship with somebody. I don't want to fill out the feedback. I get annoyed when they send me mail saying, you haven't sent me feedback yet. You haven't given me positive feedback. You haven't said, we'll do business with me again. And, you know, I don't want to deal with that. I want to just buy something and be on my way. Here we have phone connections now and postcards being sent in the mail and God knows what else.
I have advice.
Yeah.
Do not click the Skype Me button.
I don't think I will, but it just seems to me that a lot of if I was selling something on eBay, someone would say, well, I'll buy it, but first I have to Skype you to see if you sound reputable. And I'm sorry, I'm just not prepared for that kind of antagonism.
We've now learned that that's a verb that must be changed.
Yeah, it really is. It annoys me. Okay, now Verizon issued something last week, a friendly little reminder in the form of a press release. It's amazing how when you're Verizon, you can do this. You can just say something that's common sense and it becomes news. Verizon urges consumers and businesses to frequently change voicemail and answering machine passwords to avoid hacking and unauthorized long-distance charges. That's the title.
It's good advice.
It's a hell of a title, though. And there's a subtitle. Businesses also should monitor usage of remote access ports on internal switching equipment to prevent unauthorized access.
Is there more to it or just the title?
And then there's the story.
Do we need to hear that?
I'm not going to read the whole thing because we only have an hour, but... just the gist of it, frequently changing voicemail passwords, never using a factory set password on an answering machine, and monitoring remote access on business telephone equipment can help businesses and consumers protect themselves from persons who try to hack into their systems and run up large bills. First of all, if you change a password on an answering machine, I don't think you have very many choices. I don't think they ever got beyond three digits. But they go on here about how consumers are advised to do this kind of thing. And they really put the fear of the Lord into you as to what could happen if you don't. But they don't say that Verizon customers who've been victimized by scams like this are not liable. They're not liable if somebody breaks into their voicemail and somehow uses a hole in Verizon's system to make phone calls.
Well, it's actually interesting because it sort of affects a lot of people as well. It's not only embarrassing to the people who don't change their passwords, but for example, in my high school, a lot of the teachers did not change their passwords in the voicemail system, and it was the default was like 1234 or 1111 or whatever. And it's a lot more embarrassing for the students whose parents call these teachers and leave voicemail messages, you know, saying all sorts of crazy things that you would never expect them to, whatever. But I mean, it's a lot more embarrassing for the students than it is for the teachers, and so it's hard to kind of get a grasp on who's being affected by incompetence like this.
One scenario that they give, a scam artist simply calls a number of phone numbers, or a list of phone numbers, I guess is a better way of saying that, and tries to find one that is connected to an answering machine with a default password. He then gains access to the machine and in some circumstances can program it to accept, collect, or third-party billed calls. This is from the 1980s. I figure everybody's advanced beyond that by now. These calls are then billed to the owner of the phone line without the owner knowing it. The person conducting the fraud could also erase messages or create other problems for the customer. Obviously, the owner is going to know it when he gets the bill. And when the owner gets the bill, if there are collect calls on there or third-party calls that he did not make or authorize, he's not liable. They don't say that in this little press release here.
But this sort of fraud doesn't even seem like it's worthwhile these days with VoIP and all that stuff where you can call internationally for like 3 cents a minute. Mm-hmm. Kinda. It just doesn't seem like it's worth it.
Yeah, I wonder. I guess Verizon just needed to look good this week. Okay, so that's pretty much it as far as various news updates of sorts. We have a special guest with us tonight. Actually, we have a couple of special guests. We were talking about hope, talking about bandwidth. Let me first of all update people on the bandwidth situation. We've been looking at getting a huge amount of bandwidth this year, more so than we've ever had before, something like 30 times the speed we had last time, I believe, is what we're looking at. The guy who's making that all possible joins us tonight, Mark Hertzler. Correct me if I get this wrong, you're the Executive Vice President of Rainbow Broadband in New York.
That's correct.
Wow. Okay, I got it all right. So now, okay, tell us, what is Rainbow Broadband? What do you guys do?
Well, first, I'm very happy to be here. Appreciate you having me. We beam fixed broadband wireless to commercial offices all over Manhattan. Really filling in some of the gaps that the traditional phone carriers have left open for us. Traditionally, you can get a T1 or a DS3, or that's 45 megabits, and nothing in between unless you want to mux together a whole bunch of T1s at a very high cost. Through the broadband, we're able to put in any kind of bandwidth that a customer needs, 5, 10, 18, 45, 100. So we're a lot more malleable. The beauty of wireless is that it's easily deployed, quickly deployed, so we can set up for customers in a short amount of time. And I'm very happy to say we've been in business for 2 years. We've just come up on our first year of full operation, just coming up on our 100th customer. And what we're the proudest of is we haven't lost a single customer in a year, which is
nice.
Kind of unique for a service provider to say.
Yeah, oh, definitely. As a customer of service providers, I can tell you that constantly switching around and changing, sending angry letters. What that you do now, what is it that you could not have done, say, 2 years ago? Has the technology advanced to a stage where you're able to do things that just weren't possible?
Well, yeah. the size alone of the equipment, be it the dishes, be it the actual servers and switches, just allow us to put things in places that were otherwise, too obtrusive before. One thing that has helped us is this ubiquitous conversation about wireless has put it out there, whether everyone understands it or not. But when we say we do fixed microwave wireless, we're broadly accepted. The landlord community here in New York City, the commercial landlord community, has been a huge asset to us. We've got some terrific relationships on some of the premier buildings, and we're thrilled about those relationships. They allow us to basically sectorize New York City. Mm-hmm. And get to places that aren't serviced by fiber, and wireless has fiber-like performance.
Now, how many places aren't served by fiber these days? Most of them, right?
Well, nationwide, there's 750,000 commercial office buildings, and the estimate is that less than 10% of them are serviced by fiber. Mm-hmm. New York being New York is probably 5% higher, so there's still 85% of the buildings in Manhattan that are not fiber-enabled, and the purpose of getting the higher bandwidth is to support all these terrific applications, whether it's voice over IP, more and more video coming down line. the old copper infrastructure just is woefully inadequate to support it. There's just too much latency built into the system.
Now, what we're doing for HOPE, and I guess we're pretty fortunate because we're in a good location, we're basically connecting Pyro, you're here too. Maybe you could explain what we're doing. We're pointing a dish, is it, at four Times Square?
Basically, yes. We're doing a one-up to four Times Square from hopefully the 18th floor of the Pennsylvania Hotel, where the conference is going to be. And that will enable us to bring in a huge, huge amount of bandwidth to the conference available for however we want to break it up and use it. We still have the same ISP that we had for the previous HOPE conferences, so this will just be on top of what we already have.
Okay, so we're going to have a whole lot. Now, the guys at Rainbow have been great as far as helping us out with this, but there are still certain installation costs that we do have to shoulder, and that's why we're asking people for their help in doing this, because this wasn't originally budgeted, but it's just so cool, we can't pass it up. So if you go to www.2600.com, you'll see there's a little counter there, and hopefully we'll raise something so we can definitely do this. One way or another, we will do it, though. There's no question about that. Give us an idea of what kind of bandwidth we're looking at.
We're looking at the equivalent of 144 megs of bandwidth coming to us. So if you think of a normal business having a T3 of just about 45, that's going to be a lot more than any normal big business could possibly ever deliver to us.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. And, you know, I have to say, a lot of this was inspired by going to CCC this winter and seeing what the Germans were doing. The Germans had, 15 gigs or something?
Yeah, they had some enormous amount of bandwidth.
They had more bandwidth going to that building than the entire continent of Africa, which I think is obscene. But still, you know, they put up signs saying use more bandwidth. And I came back saying, you know, having the equivalent of two T1s is nice, but we're in the middle of New York City. We should be able to figure out a way to do something, find some way. There's got to be. If we just believe we can do it, we'll do it. And Pyro, you came along and you did a lot of research and you found these guys. How did you track them down?
I actually knew Mark from a previous company called Urban Broadband, who company I had worked for was interested in doing just this, the microwave link up as a backup solution for AT&T, because as we all know, AT&T and Verizon together spell trouble.
Yes.
So Mark had, I had enlisted the aid of Urban Broadband, and then Urban just kind of like dropped off the face of the earth, and I was kind of desperate and I didn't want to let this to just go to waste, so I called in a few favors, got a hold of a few contacts. And Mark somehow resurfaced, and I told him, Mark, look, you know, we need to get this done. We need to do this, and what can you do for me? And we bantered back and forth, got a lot of scenarios going, presented it to the HOPE crew, and finally hammered out something.
Awesome.
Now, the political structure here and in Europe seems to be totally different, where here it's all sort of corporation-based. In Europe, it seems like among, you know, friends, they were able to get these connections because most of the hackers there, a lot of our friends work for ISPs, and they all have friends working at other ISPs. So they were sort of able to get these links put together by, you know, just having contacts, you know, being friends with other people and saying, hey, listen, can you do us a favor? You know, just give us access for the weekend here. And they were, I mean, just an enormous amount of bandwidth. I think they had fiber going to two different co-location facilities. And
even at their campsite before, in the middle of nowhere, they had more bandwidth than we were able to get in New York City. So it's just, it got very frustrating after a while. So once again, the Europeans have inspired us to take a step forward, this time more out of anger than anything else. But we did it. And we're going to do it. We haven't done it yet, but we will. And for those who don't know, the HOPE conference is coming up July 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. It's going to be
very soon.
It's a month. It's exactly a month from today.
Oh, wow.
Today's June 21st. So, yeah, if you haven't started to panic yet, now would be a good time. We have all kinds of speakers. We have, I think, more speakers than last time. We had a lot of speakers last time. Right now we're working out the scheduling, and the hardest part is figuring out where to put everybody. One announcement I'd like to make, we have a Saturday keynote. We have a Friday keynote of Richard Stallman, who many of you know and love and have heard about and read about. Our Saturday keynote will be Michael Hart. You guys know who Michael Hart is? He is the guy who is the founder of Project Gutenberg, which makes electronic books freely available via the internet. And yeah, it's pretty cool. A lot of people are into this, and he's a great speaker. We're going to be having a very entertaining time. In addition to him, we'll have Kevin Mitnick and Jello Biafra and all your other favorite people from around the world that will be showing up, along with many new faces. So information, www.hope.net. Register for the low price. It's on now. It's going to go up at the door. So
when is the deadline?
It's going to be probably sometime in early July, and sooner for you guys overseas, because we have to get you things. So and you're further away. Okay, now, Mark, how do people get a hold of your company? First of all, let me ask you, we have line of sight, obviously, being at the Hotel Pennsylvania. We're only about 8 blocks away from Four Times Square. Do people have to have line of sight of that in order to use your business?
Yeah, Manuel, they do. in the case of the Hotel Pennsylvania, it's has to be categorized as a layup. We're actually going to be shooting from the northern balcony or window, whatever the hotel permits, right up to the Condé Nast building at Four Times Square. Less than a half a mile. It just will allow 4, 5, 6 nines of reliability and complete security. So as far as other customers are concerned, we do require a line of sight, but we've strategically located some of the taller, on top of some of the taller buildings throughout Manhattan, basically creating sectors from north to south on Manhattan. And if we can see your building, we can get you service, and we can get it to you probably in under 30 days.
Now, is this something usual where you can shoot through windows and not have a problem for customers who don't have access to the roof of their building?
Yes, we can go through windows. Obviously, we would like to maximize our penetration into the building. We prefer to walk into the landlord and have him see the benefit of enhancing the tenant services in his building. Everyone's embracing us, but where we can't get that or that we can't get that in a timely fashion to still provide service, we will go through windows. We've even figured out a couple techniques to defeat treated glass, which comes up rarely, but when it does, we've now figured out a way to defeat it as well. So
cool. And what's how do people get a hold of your company?
I appreciate you saying that. You can call us at 212-201-1240 in New York, or visit our website at www.rainbowbroadband.com.
Cool. Well, Mark, thanks for coming by. We're going to keep you on in case listeners have any questions. Pyro, I want to thank you for making all this happen.
Thank you, Eric.
Just an example of one of the many people who come together for the Hope Conference every couple of years and make amazing things happen. I want to welcome Bernie S. from Philadelphia. Bernie, are you with us?
I am, and I'm very excited about this technology.
Yeah, it's something else, you know. I knew it was possible to do something. I didn't know exactly what we were going to do, but I knew something was possible. And as long as we believe that we can do it, we'll pull it off somehow.
And it's not just the technology that excites me. It's putting thousands of interested people who are interested in making the most out of technology in one place and seeing what they can do with that much bandwidth.
Absolutely. Okay, so continuing on, we have all sorts of other things to talk about as well. As I said, Mark Hertzler is going to stay with us, so if people want to call up later on, ask him questions about Rainbow Broadband or this technology or anything like that, feel free to do so. Our number is 212-209-2900. Don't call now, because Verizon will disconnect you after a certain number of rings. We'll be taking calls in a little bit. Just wait for the announcement. Joining us now is our old friend Steve Rambam, who has been at every Hope Conference, I believe. Is that true, Steve?
Unfortunately, that is true.
Yes, it's a bit tiring, I know, but you'll be at this one as well. In fact, you're doing something even more this year. You're running your own kind of sub-conference. Tell us something about that.
We have a investigative tactics and training seminar, which is a condensed version of the seminar that we run for law enforcement all around the country. It's going to be all day Saturday from 8 o'clock in the morning till 7 at night. We have Jerry Keenan, who is a 21-year military intelligence specialist speaking on military records. We have Kelly Riddle, who is a former director of a police academy, teaching a surveillance course, which he routinely teaches to the federal government. We have an incredible DNA seminar being taught by the director of DNA Labs International. We've got Reggie Montgomery, who is an investigative legend, who has taught polygraph to just about every polygraph examiner on the East Coast. He's doing a polygraph seminar. I'm giving a seminar on international investigations, which we typically teach to the intelligence community. And from 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock, we are having, as part of the general session, we're having a considerably more in-depth than usual seminar on databases, privacy, remarkable new additions. This is going to be something that we've never made available to the general public before.
Now, just to be clear, the individual seminar presentations, that's something above and beyond the HOPE conference. That's
correct.
Something that is sort of like a separate conference running on at the same time in the same hotel in a different floor, on the 6th floor, I believe.
Correct.
Now, all these speakers, though, will be joining together for a special 2-hour panel discussion that you're going to be leading that Saturday night. I guess, as you mentioned, the general public will learn a whole lot about investigative techniques and things like that. What kind of person should consider registering for the seminars, though?
Well, From 8 o'clock to 5 o'clock, that's a closed seminar. You have to register separately. You have to be approved. Well, afraid so.
Yeah.
Not too sure Kevin Mitnick could get in.
He's going to try.
Actually, we invited Kevin to our last seminar in Vegas.
Oh, yeah?
From 8 o'clock to 5 o'clock, that is a separate seminar that is closed. You do have to subscribe. Interested attendees can go to paltechseminars.com. Paltech spelled P-A-L-L-T-E-C-H, seminars.com. But from 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock, we're rounding up all the speakers, including myself, from the seminar. And we are doing a privacy and database seminar and talk. And then all of the investigative lecturers will be available on a panel to answer questions.
Sounds great. And I understand you're interested in finding another victim.
yes.
Okay.
That's correct.
Tell us about the victim.
There's nothing better to demonstrate what is available on the unsuspecting investigative target than to have a volunteer victim who we will give a digital proctology exam.
Oh boy.
And reveal the results at the seminar. Let me say that we will be gentle. We will use, to keep going with the analogy.
Let's not keep going with
digital Vaseline. but
right.
But sorry, I couldn't help myself.
All right.
But very seriously, this has to be somebody who is willing to have, in very large part, the details of their life revealed to 1,400 or however many, 2,000 HOPE attendees. Now, we will do things, let me add before someone gets frightened, we will do things like mask the bulk of your Social Security number.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a criminal record,
But you wouldn't volunteer if you had a criminal record, probably, right?
Why not?
Oh, I guess. Okay.
Why not?
Yeah.
There are some things that you can do that break the law that are not particularly heinous.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a child molester, don't call in.
Yeah, probably not.
But if you've stolen a Twinkie and gotten caught, I don't see that as, particularly nefarious
conduct.
This
is not a good thing for people with skeletons in their closets, but it's perfect for amnesia victims who have a name and they just can't relate to it yet.
Well, hopefully we'll get someone with a bit more of a history than an amnesia victim.
Okay, great. We tried this last time, but I understand the person that actually volunteered got cold feet at the last minute.
It was an unbelievable dossier on this guy, and we called him up and chatted with him about it, and we got a call from his lawyer the next morning.
Oh, my goodness.
And, we had a release signed from him. We will give you a release to sign.
Mm-hmm.
And if we wanted to be daring and get you sued and me sued, we probably could have gone ahead. But since this is all going up in a big keynote presentation on the screen,
mm-hmm.
I thought that would be not particularly intelligent.
Now, why would somebody volunteer if they were going to get cold feet?
We were kind of suckers. This was somebody who wanted to see if people could find out about his background. And he kind of suckered us into it.
And
we did find out pretty much everything there was to know.
Uh-huh.
And then he said, okay, now I know. If you reveal it, I'll sue you. So this year, let me tell you, if there's somebody else, no problem. Sue us. We're putting it up on the screen.
Yeah, really. I mean, you know, why volunteer for something like that if you're going to back out at the last minute knowing
the guy, I think, outsmarted all of us.
Well, let's just assure the people out there thinking of volunteering to be the victim that Steve will find out about you. He'll find anything, any secret that you might have is going to be revealed. So don't volunteer if you don't want that to happen. Don't be surprised when that happens. We're not kidding here. We're not just, going to do smoke and mirrors. Steve will find out.
And it will be not only the expected investigative information, but it will be purposely an example of the sort of digital footprints that you leave in the snow as you go on with your life. I mean, you brought up eBay. Pulling someone's eBay history will tell you an enormous amount about someone,
mm-hmm.
Their Skype account, their monster.com resume listing. I mean, the investigator's best friend is MySpace, for example.
Now, it's interesting you should say that because there's an article in New Scientist last week. Basically, it seems that the National Security Agency is now taking an interest in things like MySpace and LiveJournal and Friendster and Facebook and all that, and actually following through on these leads, these social circles that people are painting about themselves.
We have an investigative meta search that does nothing but on-command data mining called GorillaTrace.com, which in fact the NSA has signed up for. And we're going to be demonstrating that at the convention also. And one of the things it does is it searches military records and Google and blogs and MySpace and Monster.com and everything that the average person is considerate enough to put out there in cyberspace so investigators don't have to work so hard.
Now, are you surprised that so many people are putting their lives on display willingly like this?
It's unavoidable. Look, 20 years ago, if you made a tape recording, it was an analog recording. To index it was borderline impossible. What the NSA did with grabbing keywords at that time was considered, you know, technology of the future. Now, any idiot with a analog to digital converter can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Photos are digital. Every document that you would have typed out on an analog typewriter, for lack of a better way to describe a typewriter, or written out longhand is now considerately. You don't have to have rooms of people doing data input.
Mm-hmm.
You are inputting the data of your life for us.
But what I'm asking is, why do people make it so easy? Why do they put their class schedules online for the whole world to see? Why do they put their photo albums for their family online?
Because it's a way of having...
A diary is supposed to be private, not public.
Well, because it's a way of having a presence in the universe. And not only that, the average person wants to share information in an easy way. I'm not saying that this information should be limited by any means. I'm speaking a little tongue-in-cheek about a lot of this. What I am saying is that there should be a level playing field, and that's one of the things that we're going to talk about at the convention. The most dangerous thing is not limiting this information. It's limiting this information only to the government.
Now, this is obviously a panel to show what's available and what you can get on people. Is this using public resources or is this?
Well, it's also going to show, for example, my company, and by the way, I'm your 101st customer. Oh, I'm going to sign up with you. We run the largest privately held investigative support service in the country called Paltech. We have 24 billion individual reference records. That's just individual records, not business records, not corporate records. Frankly, there's stuff out there that you don't know about. But even without accessing things like a social security number trace or a credit header or a driver's license or a motor vehicle or a voter registration record or cell phone number tracing or cell phone number bills or your toll calls or your credit card bills, and I could go on for about a half an hour, what's available out there that is not publicly available that we're going to demonstrate, even without accessing all of that, which we are going to go to do on victim number one. There is now today, and it's just increasing exponentially, so much stuff out there publicly that at a certain point you're going to get to the point where investigative databases are almost superfluous. Everyone's going to be able to be an investigator.
Okay,
it's kind of frightening when you think of it that way. But again, the Paltech seminar is taking place on Saturday, July 22nd during the HOPE conference. The website again?
Paltech Seminars, PALTECH Seminars www.cellphonecase.com.
Okay, all the registration info is on there. All the speaker information is on there. And again, all those speakers, along with Steve, will be appearing on a two-hour panel at the General Hope Conference. Now, if somebody is interested in being this so-called victim, how do they contact us?
They can go to the investigation website, which is Pallorium, PALLORIUM.com, and click on the link. Or they can send a direct email to my super secret email address, which is about to be announced to 100,000 people, Rambam, RAMBAM, at Pallorium, PALLORIUM.com.
Okay, sounds great. A couple of questions on some other things that have been going on in the news. You've heard about this Verizon chaperone service that's just been introduced. What do you think of something like that, where you can actually track somebody's location by cell phone, and it's, I guess it's perfect for the kids, so you know where they are at all times, right?
Anyone can do that now.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to have a GPS-enabled cell phone. That's really a misconception. In an urban area, as the gentleman to my right can tell you, you can triangulate in on any signal. There's just so many access points and transmittal and reception points that even if someone has an old analog cell phone, I can tell you within about 30, 40 feet where he is.
Now, this is something that we've discussed a whole bunch of times on the show, and you would probably know the answer to this. Who is the information available to? Who
legally or functionally?
Functionally.
You. Anyone. As long as you know the techniques and the access points and how to do this, It is painfully possible. And frankly, there are people who are starting to sell this in a commercial way, the same way you have these privacy invasion idiots on the internet that will sell you someone else's cell phone bill.
So the point here is that the data is there. The data is always being logged, and it's available. It's not something that we're making up or that we're just saying because it's technically possible. It's actually happening.
It is actually happening. I can tell you that on more than one occasion, I am aware of investigators who have found abducted children and persons at risk by tracking a cell phone. I personally found an abducted kid by seeing where a cell phone call was made from. We weren't able to focus it in on the exact spot, but we ran the number. We found that it was to a pizza place. Called the pizza place, we found out where the pizza was being delivered to, and we recovered an abducted kid. Now, frankly, could we have gotten in trouble for that? I'm sure we could have. You know, it was an exception that we made because of the circumstances. With 10 minutes of training, you could do that also.
Interesting. Jim?
I have a question. The victim that you're looking for Hope, that you're going to investigate all portions of his or her life.
I'm thinking
of it, but I want to ask, what's in it for the victim, aside from some misguided self-aggrandizement?
That's educating the masses.
That's what's in it for the masses.
Sorry, I was speaking to a human and not the microphone.
Yeah, the microphone is the ultimate human.
I'm not skilled at this, believe it or not. Yes, educating the masses. You will allow us to give a remarkable demonstration to Hope attendees regarding what's possible. Now, we could dummy up a report and show this anyway, mm-hmm. but it's not going to be as believable as if it's your record.
The reaction on the person's face is probably the best part of it.
We'll give you a special Hope gift basket of some sort. And
yes, exactly. Well,
and it'll be nice. It won't be a nasty gift basket.
I tell you what, we will all be going out to an unnamed but really nice steakhouse afterwards. We will take you with us. You get a steak dinner.
Well, that's good if you're not a veggie.
Let me
if I volunteer, can I get a vegan dinner?
How old are you?
20.
You don't have enough of a history, probably.
That's right. As your history is still being made.
By the way, we could show you how we could create a history for you.
That'd be nice. Let's give him a history.
Yeah.
And a new identity and everything.
Give you someone else's history.
All right. Here's a great story. For a governor with a secret hotline to the Department of Homeland Security, the only thing worse than hearing the phone ring is answering the call and hearing, "Are you satisfied with your long-distance service provider?" Yes, every time that phone rings, it's telemarketers, grumbled Governor Ruth Ann Minner, whose secret Homeland Defense hotline sits in her office, ringing occasionally with offers of timeshare condominiums and great deals on long distance. I wonder about the security of that line, said Minner, noting that other governors have reported similarly unwelcome intrusions on the hotline phones that are supposed to ring only in the event of a national catastrophe. Minner, who sits on a Homeland Security Advisory Panel of the National Governors Association, mentioned the annoying phone calls last Thursday on a visit to Washington. The problem seems to be the random number generators that telemarketers use. So what's a governor to do? According to Minner's office, and this is great, the Department of Homeland Security placed all the hotline numbers on the federal government's Do Not Call registry, which is supposed to ward off telemarketers. And as we proved on this show a number of months ago, you can get a list of all the numbers that are on the Do Not Call list, meaning you can get all the hotline numbers. You just have to make a lot of calls to figure out which ones.
You won't know which of the numbers, of the millions of numbers, is the hotline.
No, that's true. That's true. You're going to have to figure it out afterwards, but you'll have the number, and you'll know somewhere in this list of millions of numbers is the hotline number.
That's exactly what I was about to bring up, that we found that some months ago. Couldn't we go to like archive.org and find an old copy of that? We know that this is recent.
Mm-hmm.
We know what state she's governor of. Well, maybe you do. I don't. And
Delaware.
Thank you. And by process of elimination, we could find maybe just 100,000 numbers. We look for the 5,000 from Delaware that are on there, and we call everyone and
say, well, looks like
this is Homeland Security. Is this the Governor Minard?
All right, well, you have something to do now for the next 5 years or something like that. But now, Bernie, you brought to my attention a story that's pretty interesting about a bunch of government workers that are, what were they, saying goodbye to their families today and running off to be buried in a mountain or something. Do you know anything about this?
Well, on Monday, yeah, there were several thousand, about 4,000 high-ranking federal employees from various federal agencies, and if anything from the State Department to the Commodity Futures Trading Association. And this shadow government of sort of standby operatives all went for the bunkers on Monday in a big mock evacuation. And I unfortunately didn't have time to do much radio monitoring that day, but I would imagine that both the high-frequency, you know, shortwave backup communications channels were in use. This is similar to the DEFCON scenario used in the national security community, but these are called COGNONs, for continuity of government. And the whole idea is to, when the crap hits the fan here, another terrorist attack or whatever, major natural disaster or an actual war where this country was really threatened by a major military force or nuclear weapon or something.
A spontaneous revolution of the people or something like that.
Or something like that, too. Everybody sort of runs down their rabbit holes like mm-hmm. Like George Bush did about 3 years ago when the crap hit the fan. And they stay in these bunkers where they have lots of food. It's kind of like Dr. Strangelove. They all run down underground and keep things running. And anybody who's above ground, since we don't really have a civil defense program in this country anymore, is out of luck.
Well, just to diverge from this for a second, I don't know if anyone's aware of this. I saw this on BBC the other day. But do you know that there is a whole organization devoted to taking every single variation of every single plant and storing those seeds in a mountain, I think someplace in Antarctica, where in case there's some sort of global calamity, there will be some way of once again seeding the earth.
Well, actually, it's an island.
It's where?
I heard it was an island near Norway.
Yes.
Really? Oh, okay, maybe I got that wrong then. I know there was snow involved.
It is in Norway.
All right. Well, yeah, as long as Norway doesn't get nuked, I guess I guess we have a chance. But, okay, so Bernie, has anyone heard from these 4,000 government workers? Have they come back?
We're not sure how long they were supposed to stay away. It's kind of secret. I mean, this is a whole FEMA, and there's, 50 different agencies are involved in this. But since I don't know anybody who ran down the rabbit hole, They're not telling me when they're coming back out of the hole.
Well, you might be down that rabbit hole. Maybe you can listen to the radio from there. If you are there, please let us know that you're okay. We just want to know what's going on down there.
I've noticed the federal government running much better the last 48 hours. Maybe we can keep them there.
Ah, yes.
I think they should just stay there.
Well, okay, that's one opinion, certainly. Now, Bernie, I noticed also you mentioned this, that there's a new number station or number phone number or something. You want to tell us something about that?
Another number.
Another number?
Well, this is like, as we've just been discussing in the past few shows, these are sort of a variation of the mysterious shortwave number stations that all our shortwave listeners are familiar with, where it's just mysterious groups of typically five numbers read aloud, usually in English, but often in foreign languages. And these are typically read by covert government agencies around the world, not just American, but other countries' government agencies, to get coded messages to their field operatives. It's a very secure method of getting short messages to people around the world, because a shortwave radio will pick up signals from all over the world, and the messages are encrypted with a one-time pad, so there's no way anybody's going to crack them. But somebody's come up with a variation on this, and they're posting certain phone numbers on Craigslist with a cryptic message saying, "Mein Fräulein, hope to see you this summer. Please call." And the latest one has a number, area code 617-848-1172. And we called this on the air. Was it last week, Emmanuel?
Oh, this is a new one. This just happened yesterday, I think.
Right, but we called whoever is doing this. We think it's the same person because it starts with the same eerie music, just like a lot of these number stations on shortwave do. And then it just launches into these number groups. And it starts with a preamble called group and blah, 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 with a three-digit number. And the last preamble was group 617. And sure enough, the next phone number that came up a week later is in the 617 area code.
Well, actually, no, there was one last week that came up in 678, I think, down south.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay, so it broke the chain. The first two were clues as to where the next area code would be, weren't they?
Yeah, that was what the theory was, but that seemed to have been squashed when it showed up in 678, assuming that was a real one. But I noticed some people have been saying that there's something different about this one, too.
I haven't done any numerical analysis on this, but they have found that there's a different, we can call it, say, a pattern, mm-hmm. but the pattern that has been used before is not consistent with this one.
Interesting.
So it could be somebody is spoofing the previous numbers, or maybe not, but this is really a big mystery, and I hope that one of our listeners gets to the bottom of this.
Well, there's a whole discussion of this on one of our listeners' sites, homelandstupidity.us, which has a great discussion going on about this. But, Mike, I believe you have something to say about this, don't you?
I might have something to say.
I think you should have something to say. You want to share your bit of knowledge with the rest of the world on this?
Well, I've been telling the listeners the past couple of weeks that I had planned to make one of these stations, and now I've done so.
Ooh.
You've made one of these.
Yeah. It's not that hard.
It's not that hard. So are you actually telling us now that this new number that just popped up yesterday that everybody's freaking out over, that you know something about this?
I know a lot about it, yeah.
Know a lot about this. All right. Let me continue here. So you have knowledge of this number, of its composition, of the numbers that are being read that apparently don't seem to track with the other numbers that have been read in the past. So are you saying there's some kind of secret message in there?
I wouldn't want to go so far as to say that there is a secret message, but I would advise our listeners to look for one.
I see. And is this some kind of a promotion for hope that you've put together?
Look, these rumors, you're really going too far with these questions.
All right.
Here.
Well, if you see a flashing George W. Bush on the Hope logo later tonight on the main 2600 page, you can assume that there is a secret message on that particular phone number that will get you free Hope tickets if you are able to figure it out. And I'm told also that the one clue that we can give out, that we're authorized to give out for this particular number, is lose the five. I don't know what that means, but that's what the clue is. Lose the five.
It's a good clue.
It's a good clue. But okay, so just so that people aren't going nuts here who are tracking the first few of these, this is something definitely not the same. We can verify that.
Yeah.
Something that you constructed yourself to show how someone else could construct something like this and fool people. But I understand that it does sound a little bit different.
Yeah, in order to make it, I took a recording of some of the old ones and chopped it up so I could get the digits. And the recording was a bit overmodulated, so this number might sound a bit overmodulated, but you have to really pay attention.
Bernie, you sound like you're in shock.
I'm stunned that someone would do this.
Yes, somebody that we know.
No less than one of our kin here.
Somebody that we thought we knew. And look at how this happened. Wow.
He's on all kinds of lists now just for doing this.
Yeah, really. The NSA is on their way up here now to query you.
Well, now I have their number, too. So
what's this phone number again that people should call to get the secret message and maybe decode it and maybe win a couple of pair of Hope tickets if they drop the 5 or lose the 5 or whatever the hint was?
617-848-1172. Mm-hmm.
All right. Good luck. Good luck with that. I have a feeling George W. Bush is going to be flashing for a long time on the front page. Okay, our phone number here at the station is 212-209-2900. A couple of special guests with us. We've got Mark Hertzler from Rainbow Broadband, providing bandwidth for the Hope Conference this summer. And we have Steve Rambam, who is going to be doing some amazing things at the Hope Conference this summer as well, running a sub-conference, the Politech Seminars, and also looking for a victim. You could be that victim. 212-209-2900 is our phone number. Shall we see who's out there? Good evening. You're on the air. Oh, not anymore. Let's go over here. Good evening. You're on the air. Speak up, please.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. You're on.
Oh, hey. What's going on, guys? Hey, are you guys still interested in perhaps learning about voting machines, the electronic voting machines?
Oh, absolutely. What can you tell us?
Well, I served as an Election Day official. The machines were the Diebold.
Mm-hmm.
They use a 128 megabyte PCMCIA memory card in the sides. I guess every time a person votes, it has a paper trail and it stores the vote to the memory card as well.
Okay.
So
it actually makes a piece of paper with the vote on it.
Right. Correct.
So basically what the government has purchased in this instance is very, very expensive pencils.
Exactly.
Okay.
Did you see any particular way that this machine could be compromised in your dealings with it?
Well, there are there's two doors on the side of the machine, two little doors. You need a key. One door was to close and lock the bay for the memory card. The other door we were told not to open and touch, but there was a symbol of a telephone on there.
Ooh.
So, I didn't want to go against anybody's, rules and regulations and that,
no,
so I didn't
not.
Mess with it, but
it's
possible.
Well, I don't suppose they let you bring one of those home, did they?
Well, I didn't get a chance to bring one home, no, but I have a Election Day officials like user manual for the machine.
Oh, nice.
And a DVD. I'd be interested in sending that to you guys, maybe, if you want to take a look at it.
Yeah, that'd be great. That would be awesome.
Just send it to the address I'm sure you guys will give out, right?
You can send it directly to 2600. I can give you that address right now if you want.
Okay, yeah.
It's 2600 P.O. Box 752. And that's in Middle Island, New York, zip code 11953.
Awesome.
All right. And, we'd love to see that.
Okay. Very cool, guys. I'll send it on the way.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Take care, guys. Bye.
All right. It's amazing what people can figure out if they just pay attention. And that's what our listeners are doing. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi. Greetings from Southern Virginia. Got a question for the gentleman with the ISP.
Go ahead.
Just out of curiosity, being an RF kind of guy, what sort of frequencies are you talking about that you deliver your material on? Are you using 2.4 gigs or the 900 megahertz bands?
It's a good question. Thanks for asking. We're in the 5.3 to 5.8 gigahertz ISM band, which is the industrial, scientific, and medical bands that were carved out by the government about 4 years ago. It's unlicensed. It's covered under Part 15 of the SEC code, which means that because it's unlicensed, it doesn't have the typical protections of it's your dedicated link or it's your dedicated urban environment that you have coverage of. But it's self-defeating. We all play well together because we don't want to, knock each other out. So,
mm-hmm. Okay, one quick question. What sort of antennas?
There are so many manufacturers out there now. I probably shouldn't be speaking about ours specifically, but the cost of equipment. There's NEC, there's RAD, there's Saragon, there's...
Did he mean what type of antenna, as in a dish or something? Or?
Yeah, like the dish, Yagi, quad,
oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Typically, we're shooting an 18 megahertz on a one-foot dish.
Very cool. Hey, sounds like a nifty system there. Good luck with it.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for calling. And you anticipate a more of a nationwide rollout for this kind of thing?
Well, we're doing it a little differently this time. You know, there was this big diaspora in telecom the last time. We're hoping that we've learned a few things from the past. We're growing it organically as we speak. We're trying to do a proper job here in the New York City area. There's always kind of forces that want you to grow bigger and faster. And we might be ready to go for the right situation, but we just want to do it right.
Yeah.
We really want to service the small, medium business sector that everybody has always talked about doing and has then kind of forgotten and gone on to the higher hanging fruit. We're all about big jobs and, you know, we'll definitely talk to Steve. but we really would like to get a reputation for making people happy with the service.
Are you able to reach the outer boroughs, or Brooklyn, Queens?
We can, actually. We're getting quite a bit of activity, and we're starting to get over into Brooklyn and Queens and obviously northern New Jersey. One of the benefits of the wireless is that we can go across natural borders, and we'll be taking very shortly, probably by the fourth quarter of this year, a redundant feed, a gig feed across island to northern New Jersey to back up all of our Manhattan network, which is a nice piece of redundancy.
Cool. All right, Mark Hertzler from Rainbow Broadband, thanks so much for coming by. Give us contact info again for people who might be interested in your...
Well, Manuel, I really appreciate coming on. We're very excited about providing service for Hope, supporting Hope in any way possible. Our website is rainbowbroadband.com, and you can call us here in New York at 212-201-1240-1240.
And website?
www.rainbowbroadband.com.
Okay, great. Now, Steve, I want to thank you also for coming by, as you have many times in the past.
My pleasure.
And again, the info for the Paltech seminars can be found where?
At paltechseminars.com, P-A-L-L-T-E-C-H, seminars.com. And also, I believe there's a link from the hope.net site.
Yes, there is. And you can look forward to all sorts of interesting talks and, of course, the big talk with you and all the panelists from the seminar appearing at the Maine Hope Conference. And again, if you're interested in being a victim, somebody that we find out all sorts of information about and reveal that information to a fascinated audience, what's the method for somebody volunteering for that?
They can either call the telephone number on our investigative agency website, which is palorium.com, palorium.com, or they can send a direct email to me, Rambam, R-A-M-B-A-M, at palorium.com.
Cool. Thanks, Steve, for coming by. And again, a couple of announcements. The Hope Ride Board is now up and running. If you are interested in sharing a car with somebody or getting a ride from a particular part of the continent, just go to... go to our website, www.hope.net. You should see a link there. Actually, it's a link from the main 2600 page to the Hope Ride Board. It's actually part of our wiki. And you can just post all sorts of information. So hopefully you can get a ride that way if that's what you're looking for. Also, if you're interested in being a vendor at 2600, the vendor tables have now opened up. You can mail vendors at 2600.com if you need more information about that. And we'll be having a whole lot of different people, different organizations peddling their wares in various ways. And again, of course, the Hope Network will be bigger than ever before, and we'll have more speakers than ever before. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. Be sure to register. Don't forget, because the prices go up after pre-registration. www.hope.net. All the information is there. That's it for us this week. We're pretty much out of time. So we'll be back again next week with all sorts of other updates on what's been going on in the world. Whatever it may be, however bad it might get, try to remain positive. Good night.
Yes. I want y'all to check this out.
Yes.
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 No.
Yes.
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 Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. No.
Yes. negative, but then I positive. Some say I'm negative, but then I positive. Some say I'm negative, but then I positive. Some say I'm negative, but then I
positive.
Some say I'm negative, but then I positive. Some say I'm negative, but then I positive. Some say I'm negative, but then I positive. Some say I'm negative. Yes.
No.
Yes.
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 It's okay to say no.
Say no.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
It's okay to say no.
No.
Yes.
Learn how to say no.
No.
Loud and clear.
Yes.
I want y'all to check this out. Yo, now you know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying. And you'll know what time it is. You know what I'm saying? Check this out, though. You know what I'm saying?
No.
You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?
No.
See, because you can't. You understand what I'm saying? And it's good. You know what I'm saying?
No.
And you know what I'm saying? Yo, man, not only that, but yo, you know what I'm saying? And you'll know what time it is. On. Listen.
Some say I'm negative, but then I positive. Some say I'm negative, but then I positive. Some say I'm negative, but then I positive. Some say I'm negative.
No.
Negative.
No.
Some say I'm negative, but then I positive. Some say I'm negative, but then I positive. Some say I'm negative, but then I positive. Some say I'm
no.
No.
But then I
yes. Yes.
Yes.
Say no.
Yes.
Yes.
Say no. Run home to tell your mom or dad.
Yes.
It's okay to say no.
No.
I got you.
No.
Yes.
Say no. One. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yes.
It's okay to say no.
No.
No. I got you.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Ha 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 ha. Ha ha. Ha ha. Ha ha. Hey, Kat. This is WBAI New York 99.5 FM, the first day of summer, June 21st, 2006. You're listening to WBAI. And-